And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 768. It's a midweek episode, trying to get back to a few more of these a month. That means I have a special guest joining me. We're not recapping Fab, folks. We're talking May standouts, some hitters, some pitchers, and all that fun stuff in between. In order to help me talk about these players and some news and more, you can. He was actually on the show a couple months ago talking about his FSWA award that he won, which was pretty cool stuff. You can find him over at pitcherlist.com and on Twitter at underscore Nate Schwartz. Nate Schwartz, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great. Yeah, thank you for having me back. Guess there were no tomatoes thrown at me for my first appearance. So, glad to be back for round two.
No, glad to have you. Like I was telling you before the show, it was a fun conversation the first time around. And then just watching you do the work you're putting in, the deep dives that you're doing on players and stuff. It's always highly entertaining stuff. So it's very, very much a guy I would like to have back on the show to talk about fantasy baseball. So before we get to that, though, like remind everybody, like I mentioned, where they can find you. What do you have cooking over there at PitcherList? Because what's really interesting about what you do is, like I said, you do the deep dive on players. Then you also have like your analytical stuff, like just like statistical analytical kind of more broad is the right word, dives type thing. So you have a whole lot of different things going on over there.
Yeah. So this is kind of the again, we were kind of discussing this before the show, but it's this really fun time where like I'll have an idea and start to do the research for it. You know, this, you know, potentially bigger thing, you know, what the league dynamic is, how is the league shifting in, you know, some aspect of how the game's played. And then, like, you know, time doesn't allow for that to happen right now, especially with, you know, how much stats have stabilized now. And just we really, you know, I think there's a lot of asks for player analysis and stuff like that. So I will kind of share that the one I am taking a look at now is just kind of guys who are pitchers on the more like selectively aggressive side. So, you know, on the hitting side, we've heard a lot about the baseball prospectus set Seager, which is about selective aggression, and PitcherList's own decision value statistic really kind of hits on that. But me and another PitcherList staffer, Taylor Tarter, are taking a look at kind of the, you know, selective aggression and kind of the making of the mold of the what the strikeout stuff can be and how that all kind of fits together. One of the aspects of that I found really interesting is two strike zone rate versus non-two strike zone rate. And there are some pretty interesting names at the top of that list. So I won't reveal too much, don't want to kind of bury the lead, but it's exciting stuff.
Well, I'm looking forward to that because it's something I kind of pounded home during draft season. One of my focuses for drafting pitchers is I want high strikeout guys. Like I'm going to be very aggressive here because it's a stat that, like, we kind of – if you're a strikeout guy, you're a strikeout guy, if that makes sense. And so you can kind of play off of that. Now, obviously, injuries and other factors can come into play. But, you know, after the top 30-ish pitchers, you start seeing a – maybe even less than that. You see a massive drop-off in K. So to look at your analysis now and maybe we can even take a deeper dive in, okay, well, this person might be a, quote-unquote, sneakier target or if he's on the waiver wire because he's being more aggressive by doing X, Y, or Z. That's a very intriguing angle to this, and I guess that's with all this new data we get these days. And between StatCast and whoever else and Pitch, you know, you got the big brain Kyle Bland over there doing things all the time. That that is definitely an interesting way to dig into it. Looking forward to that. All right, let's talk a couple bits of news here before we get into a bunch of players to discuss here. Aaron Nola, we got some news on Wednesday. He's basically suffered another setback. He was set to throw a bullpen this week, but before this week, he's only been able to throw on flat ground because his ankle is not responding. Now they're saying, the Phillies are saying he's going to miss even more time. Still no timetable for this. What's your thoughts here? I guess more importantly, it's probably gives Mick Abel more time in the rotation. So how do you kind of look at this in a fantasy angle?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting that he hasn't progressed off of flat ground. That means he's still, you know, probably about a week away, if not more, from a rehab assignment. And all of a sudden, you're looking at, you know, a late June, early July return for Nola. And one that opens the door for Abel. He'll get the start tonight. And then I think Roster Resource has him lined up again to get the Cubs on Monday. But the other opportunity I think this creates is Andrew Painter. He's made a handful of rehab assignments. Like, it's looking good. I don't know how much the Phillies really want to push him, but I think his time could be soon. They've already, you know, tried to, they've said that they've permanently moved Taiwan Walker to the bullpen for the time being. Obviously that will be a lot more fungible, but it seems like there could be an opportunity if they want to get him in for a major league start to show what he's got, you know, similar to Abel. Abel, you know, kind of surprised a lot of folks that had a lot of prospect fatigue on him. Obviously Painter, you know, there's less fatigue, but I think it still exists for a guy who's been out for as long as he has been, that, you know, I would be, the only real move I'd be doing there is, you know, stashing him where available if you have the extra flexibility.
It's a good call. We've been waiting for Painter. This might actually be the opportunity, as you mentioned, with injuries opening the way for him to come up with the big club. Speaking of injuries, Pablo Lopez. This is one I kind of have a feeling to be worse than we want it to be. Left Tuesday start after one warm-up pitch in the sixth inning. The team diagnosed it as a lat injury, put him on the IL immediately last night, which you usually don't see till after imaging takes place. He underwent imaging on Wednesday. We still don't know the results as of this recording. But the fact they threw him on the IL right away made me like, okay, that's not good. David Festa was supposed to pitch on Wednesday at AAA. That got scratched, so he's coming up to the bigs to make his next start with the Twins. Are you back in on the Festa train?
I think so, but I'm not sure. We didn't see him make it through five innings at any point in his big league time, and his time in AAA has been kind of mixed. Like, he's been, the results have been good, but he made it six innings once. He's thrown five, I think, three times, and then there's a couple of appearances of three innings sprinkled in. And I don't know if he's going to provide the length that you might want in a pickup like that. I'm not positive on what his schedule is going to line up to be, but if the Twins get, you know, something favorable, he's definitely worth the stream. He's got a handful of like average to above average pitches. And I think there will be a big league pitcher in there. But I don't think he's necessarily a guy that I would be, you know, jumping to go get.
Yeah. You nailed a couple of my big things there. As we saw the workload, kind of preventative workload, I guess we could call it. I don't even know what's called workload management technically with Festa the first time through. He was on the IL for a little bit. He's made two starts since then. He threw five innings in his last back out for Twins standards. But to your point, I'm just concerned that he has to be extremely efficient to get the job done. As of right now, he's tentatively going to pitch this Sunday against Toronto, and then he'd line up next Saturday at Houston. So not the best of matchups, not the worst, but not the best either. So, you know, pick your battles if you choose, but I'm kind of with you on that one. I'm not overly excited for David Festa. Another guy I'm not excited about is Wade Miley, but we'll get to that in a minute. Hunter Green was put on the IL with a groin injury. He already missed time on the IL this in May with said groin injury. He knew it pretty much right away as well. I mentioned Wade Miley. Wade Miley got picked up by the team to join the rotation. Any thoughts on this situation?
Yeah, I'm a little worried about how long of an absence this is going to be for Green. Re-aggravated injury, knew it immediately. One, you know, severity is obviously the first question, but then how comfortable are they, you know, rushing him back? I think the Reds are in a very precarious spot where they still haven't done anything to kind of bring all the hype that they have together in the standings. They're sitting, I believe, just below 500, and it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's not like they're sitting, you know, five games above, and, you know, the playoff push is, you know, looming large in front of them. Instead, it looks like it could be another year of, you know, kind of treading water with some of these young guys. You know, are they waiting for a Chase Burns to come up, you know, so they have like a more dynamic 1-2 punch that could get them over the edge? So I'm really wondering if this could be, you know, a month or a 2 month long absence for Green, and then, like, which would just be brutal for him because he's having such a great season. And I think especially pitching in the ballpark that he's in. I think he is should be considered an ace. But I don't know if the longevity is going to be seen this year.
And the shame is, like, the discussions in draft seasons, the quote-unquote injury history of Green, it's nothing related to his arm, his elbow, his shoulder, nothing, which is a shame. And the first thing I thought of when I saw the news that he was leaving the game on Tuesday night, I'm like, oh, no, this is Cole Reagans all over again. You know, he had the minor groin injury, only missed a little bit of time, comes back. Not too many starts later, we're back on the IL. And Reagans was tentatively not going to miss a start. He ended up throwing, like, two rehab outings, at least one, maybe two. So that got stretched out quite a bit. Reagans comes back on Thursday, thank goodness, tomorrow. Hopefully stays healthy this time around. But to your point, soft tissue injuries, like, they can re-aggravate. You never know if they're bringing them back too early, too late. And this is one I think they need to be just cautious with, and it could be a month plus, like you said. We'll have to wait and see on the MRI. But time will tell on that with Hunter Green, which is a big, big bummer. All right, let's get into some players to discuss here. A handful of players had really good Mays, and maybe not your prototypical, you know, common names to everybody, maybe to the degenerates. Like, if you're listening to the show, you probably know them. But to a lot of people, you never know. They're not the most flashy names if you're in a 10-team league. But there are also players, some, that Nate has written about recently. And they're also players that I like a lot, so it kind of correlates very, very well. So I'm going to kick it off with our first one here, and I'm just going to keep mentioning stats from basically May 1st. I'm using the month of May, but I'll count the couple days into June when we do this. We're going to go Miguel Vargas of the Chicago White Sox. This is the guy that I've been touting for like a fab pickup for a few weeks now. I've had him rostered in 12-team leagues for most of May, actually, if I think about it properly. In the month, hitting .266, 7 homers, 17 runs, 17 RBIs. I love to see the 14% K rate, which is very, very important to me. You did an article on Miguel Vargas, or at least a part of an article on Miguel Vargas. When you dug in on Vargas, what are you seeing? Is this something we should, like, is the prospect hype finally coming out in Miguel Vargas and he's here to stay, or should we still be like, it might be a little lucky?
I think, I mean, as always, it's kind of a mix of both. But I think the biggest thing, you know, that we heard about him and who he is, we're finally seeing. Vargas was always kind of known as, you know, great bat to ball guy. He's got this great hit tool. You know, there's below average raw power in there. Like, he's not going to be a homer threat, but he's going to hit the ball, and he's going to hit the ball well. And in his time in the big leagues, you know, mostly with the Dodgers, we never really saw that. I know he was kind of the peak of his time with the Dodgers was when he went viral for just standing at the plate with a hand injury and just not swinging. And this is the I'm sorry if that got caught on the but his rolling zone contact is finally above 90% for the first time in his big league career, which is a really big indicator that that something's clicked for him, and we're seeing him hit a lot of line drives and just hit the ball well. He's, you know, very clearly seems confident in the zone decisions he's making. And that makes me, you know, pretty excited for who this could be. He's been hitting .300 in the White Sox lineup almost every day now. He's going to get opportunities for runs and RBIs. And I think he just has really kind of rounded into out of nowhere into the potential player I think we all kind of thought he was going to be with the Dodgers.
Yeah, I totally agree. I love what we're seeing. That's why I kind of jumped on him early, because the bat-to-ball skills you mentioned, the plate discipline, which I highlighted a second ago, his Statcast metrics were starting to get a little better. Like, everything you wanted to see, we're going in the right direction. So I think he's definitely here to stay, hitting early in the order. It's a White Sox lineup. Yes, by no means are they world beaters, but they have been a lot better than I think a lot of teams people expected. With this team, like, Edgar Carroll's been kind of a disappointment. Like, Joshua Palacios looked good. Mike Tauchman's back and he's producing. Benintendi, for the 3 days he stays healthy, is very good. Even Lennon Sosa was playing great until he got hurt. It's like, it's a team you would not pick on paper, but here we are. Maybe it's like the real life major league. Who knows? But they're getting it done for sure.
Yeah, it's and it's interesting because I'm unsure if, you know, especially for the, I know he's been kind of a a bit more of a help for those in OBP leagues, but his batting average on balls in play is at 267, and that's the highest of his major league career so far. And that's like 25th percentile amongst the league. Like, you know, he's doing much better in, you know, what his hard hit rates are, what his barrel rate is. And, you know, I wonder if there could be a boon of average coming up in the next couple of months.
Very, very possible. Good point on that. The law dog, Lawrence Butler, who in April made a lot of people like, what was I thinking drafting this guy? And then we all remind people, Nate, as analysts, that it's a long season. Like, a lot changes. And the law dog has got things going. He's hitting 272 since May 1st, four homers, four steals. Like, the last 2 weeks has just been bonkers. He's hitting close to 400 over the last 2 weeks. He's really picked things up. You did a dive into Lawrence Butler. What kind of nuggets did you gain from that that maybe should have told people to just, you know, relax a little bit?
So it's interesting because when I wrote about this, it wasn't necessarily framed as a relax a little bit article. It was aptly titled Lawrence Butler Has Lost His Way, to which he had. You looked at like any rolling chart and everything had just, you know, precipitously dropped off around the like kind of end of April mark, which is just, you know, it was unlike a guy who showed us skills in the breakout second half and then got off to a good start in the beginning of the year. Usually you don't even see that beginning of the season from a guy who's still going through it. And it looked like, you know, he was just trying to do too much. His pull rate shot up, his fly ball rate shot up in the month of May and kind of end of April. And, you know, usually you hear he's hitting more pulled fly balls. That's a good thing. And in Butler's case, it actually wasn't. I also took a look at kind of some of the new bat tracking metrics. And I found that the attack direction, so, you know, horizontally in the field, where is the bat direction or where's the bat directed? And his bat was more often to the opposite field than it was in early in the season, which also does not really compute with a guy who was hitting more pulled batted balls and more fly balls. That just screams, you know, he's trying to yank that ball around and the quality of contact is not going to be good. And what we're seeing now is that he has found his way. That approach wasn't working. His pull rate has plummeted. His fly ball rate has absolutely plummeted. And he's kind of gone back to being this all fields hitter. You know, that's what he was last year. And he's really found his groove of doing it again. So I think kind of at the end of the piece, I was like, you know, we'll find out very shortly. Is this who he's going to be? Is he going to be in the slump that, you know, he's going to have to work out of? Or is he going to figure it out on his own? And, you know, I think we got our answer pretty quickly, which is nice.
It's very nice. Like, looking at it more since May 1st, he had a 113.6 max EV, had 10% barrel rate, a 52% hard hit rate. So when you're spraying it like that, that is a beautiful thing. His O swing is at 25%, which is definitely improved. Zone contact's 81. Like, everything he was doing, he still swings and misses a lot, which is slightly concerning. But as a whole, he's really putting it together and turning into the ball player I think most hoped he would be once again this year. His teammate, Jacob Wilson, has been quite the just wow situation. On the season, he's hitting 355 with seven home runs and five steals. I thought he did for average. Not that good. Definitely didn't think the power would be there. In May, Jacob Wilson hit 386 with four homers and four steals. But almost even crazier than the batting average, he walked 8.6% of the time and struck out 7%. A 7% strikeout rate in the month while he hits 386. This guy is special, Nate. But the question is, how sustainable is this special?
I don't think it's particular. Like, I think it is sustainable, but not necessarily in this 350 batting champ way. I've kind of pegged him to finish the year at around 310, 315, which is obviously, you know, an exceptional, likely AL Rookie of the Year season. but not necessarily historic pace. One of the things that we have a pitcher list is within the realm of the PLV statistics is a pitch hitability stat. And you can see, based on, velocity stuff and location, how hittable are the pitches that any batter's facing. And early in the year, it was really around the 90th percentile mark. It was really, really high. I don't think a lot of pitchers were scared of him. Obviously, he's hit for some power, and I think he was able to take some advantage of that. But I think there was a lot of really in the zone and a lot just way non-competitive out of the zone. And I'm really curious, as over the last couple of weeks, it's ticked down to more kind of league average pitch hitability. If people start treating him like, a real, real threat to do damage kind of in all ways, not just hitting the ball, but he gets on base and he's shown that I think he's going to hit for more power than anyone really anticipated while he was a prospect. So I'm really curious on if people start throwing him a lot more garbage, a lot more things, in the shadow zone, in places where all he's going to be able to do is put it in play, if that's going to translate to production for average, or he's going to kind of have that sharp regression. So, I don't think it's all bad, but I think, the rose-colored glasses, I think, on, a shining rookie are very, very strong right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's been amazing what he's done, and I think he's definitely still a very good, batting average asset, to your point, but it's been overachieved might be the nice way to put it on that one. Jeremy Peña, this is one that has really stood out to me doing daily content and everything. The month of May, Peña's hitting .333 with 5 homers and 5 steals, 18 RBIs, 15 runs scored, a little less than 11% strikeout rate, all outstanding stuff. He's hitting .310 on the year with 9 homers and 10 steals. So he's basically on pace for 25 plus, which is nuts. This is a guy who wasn't too long ago as a 2020 guy. Had a couple hiccups the last couple of seasons, but looks like he's finding stride again, still very young. I'm a believer in what we're seeing. Maybe the average can't sustain this high, but I think the power, the speed, what we're getting overall, I think this is a pretty darn good ball player, and he's maybe coming into his own. You can totally tell me if I'm wrong, but what do you see in Jeremy Peña?
No, I'm absolutely going to agree with you. He's been on a tear. The most exciting thing is that he's gotten a lot more aggressive at the plate, but has also paired that with making contact. Usually you can see the more dangerous combination of getting more aggressive, but for power. And I think that hurts a lot of players negatively when they try to sail out just to put the ball over the fence. And granted, he plays in a really nice hitter's park, especially for right-handed hitters. But he's getting a lot more aggressive, not necessarily in the form of pure swing rate, but it is kind of seen in his just overall swing aggression and what pitches he's attacking, but then he's actually hitting those. And I was looking earlier, and his 15 game rolling zone contact, which is like the default rolling window on the Fangraphs player graphs, is at 97%.
Pretty good.
Which is just actually insane. That's a guy who is seeing everything and everything is in stride. And the other thing is that he's increased his air pull percent by 15% or by 5% from 15% to 20. And that takes it well above league average. And when you're hitting the ball all the time and pulling fly balls in Houston, I'm going to blank on what the name of their ballpark is now. Good things are going to happen. And I think it's just really exciting. And, I think we're going to see that pure ceiling season this year from Peña.
Yeah, I think it's finally coming. He was in that grouping with Dansby Swanson and Mason Winn and a few others as that last tier of shortstops. And it's good to see that he's coming through in a big way. And I'm with you. And side note, all I remember is Enron Field. I know it's not Enron, Minute Maid Park. So I don't know what it's called now. It's definitely something different. It's like Globe Life Field or something. I don't know. But yeah, definitely a good season going for Peña. I hope he finishes it. And I hope the Astros continue to heat up at the plate because I need some other guys for fantasy. Mikel Garcia of the Kansas City Royals. It was a slow start to the year, but the wheels got churning with seven steals since May 1st, three homers. He's hitting 342. Contact skills are good once again. He's one of those guys, and he showed up on a Bloom board on Tuesday when Ryan and I recorded, that he has improved certain key aspects to his game. And it's just kind of like, okay, is it sustainable? Like the home run to fly ball metrics, the BABIP metrics, these type of things that you want to see because it's correlated into his batting average. And Mikel Garcia was a popular draft target last year because people were like, okay, tons of speed. He's going to lead off, hit for average. There's more power than we think is what people kept saying. It never really came to fruition. We're kind of seeing it this year, but who knows if that's sustainable. Where are you at on Mikel Garcia? Because I think last year was a lot of injuries really derailed things. Now he's healthy. For the most part, he was just banged up again. But he's producing quite well right now.
Yeah, it's – I mean, I think it's just kind of the natural everyone, you know, all of the analysts, everyone was in on him last year and even a little bit the year before. So once everyone's, you know, kind of saying the ship is sailed, now's the year that he's like, okay, I'm here. Let me do stuff. And what I think is the most exciting is, unlike some of the other players we've talked about, who are guys who are getting more aggressive, finally putting the bat to ball, he's been this uber aggressive hitter that is really kind of taking a step back from that. He's swinging a lot less. And even though he has about the same chase rate and like hard hit rates across the board, I think the fewer swings he's making means that he's making better decisions in the zone. And we're seeing that directly from him being able to kind of get to the top end of his power a little bit more frequently. He's already, I think, technically set a new max EV this year by like 0.3 of a mile an hour at 110.3. But last year, he only hit a ball 108.6. His barrel rate is up from 3.5% last year to almost 6% this year. And for a guy who is going to put the ball in play a bunch, you know, these are the things you want to see. He's making the better decisions where he can hit the ball a little bit better, and his zone contact rate is a little bit up as well. So I'm really excited. I mean, I think he's probably a true talent, like 280-ish hitter right now, but we've already seen five homers from him. I think I'm pretty confident that he's going to get to 10 homers and, you know, potentially 25, 30 steals on the whole season. And I think he, you know, definitely is proving that he might have a shot to even hit leadoff for this Royals team that is really kind of trying to do everything for offense.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, he's got that 10 to 15 home run, 30-ish steal upside. If he can pull that off, like, big boy things could take place there with him. And one of the kind of trends, I think, with a lot of these players is it's younger players that have taken a couple years to grow, because that's what happens. People need the reps to get it together, and now they're seeing this consistent quality at bats, and things are coming together. So does that mean a 29-year-old Ernie Clement is in the mix with that? I don't know. But right now it's interesting to watch. Clement, since May 1st, hitting 305, three home runs, one steal. Definitely a deeper league play, but kind of giving you some 12-team vibes as of late here. What should we be thinking here with Ernie Clement? Because I know it's a name that most people are like, yeah, whatever. It's like he's the taste of the month, but that's going to disappear type thing. Maybe, maybe not. But I'm intrigued in certain formats. Let's say that much.
Yeah, I'm not really intrigued. He had this just monster series against the A's. I think he had four straight multi-hit games against them.
Yes.
And hit homers in the first two. And I know the A's were a lot of people's darlings early in the year, but especially their pitching has really kind of bottomed out right now. And I am really not taking too much from that. I was just looking earlier, and he's cut his chase a little bit, but he's still striking out a bunch more. But I don't, like, nothing in the profile really says that, you know, this is going to be anything tangible, other than he's, you know, going to get playing time, hitting, you know, kind of in the middle, at the bottom of the middle third of the Blue Jays order. But I'm sure outside of that, you know, last weekend from him, I don't think his stats in May would necessarily pop out, which, you know, I think kind of says, you know, who he is as a player and what he's been to the fantasy community as of late.
Great, great point on that A's series, that especially recently. So it's all fresh in our minds. Like, hey, this guy's doing good things. You know, fantasy works. It's all, you know, relevant. And what have you done for me lately type discussion. So, yeah, it's very much the case. I think he's going to have his weeks where he's going to be streamable in the right matchups, of course. But I'm with you. I am not starting him every time out there. That is for darn sure. But at least we've seen that, hey, there's something there if he gets a chance to get hot, I guess, but not the most reliable source. TJ Friedl, a player that throughout the years, when healthy, has been pretty darn serviceable. Problem is the healthy part with TJ Friedl. In the month of May, though, he did get 125 plate appearances. So that's not bad, even though he did miss some time in the month. Hit .337, three homers, four steals, scored 20 runs. Eight RBIs leading off for the Reds, but scored 20 runs. Walked 15% of the time. I think my deal with him is, like, if he's healthy, I love it. If he's not healthy, we have trouble.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think he's a fascinating profile of this really, really passive guy. He's got, you know, this like 30-something, it's like 36 or 37% swing rate, which puts him like in the Nuke Bar level of passiveness. But he doesn't hit for, you know, a lot of power. I think he's aided a lot by the ballpark. But we've seen time and again that Friedel's a guy that when he's playing and he's in a rhythm and staying on the field, he is going to produce. And the OBP is incredible. The average is obviously great now. And he's cut his chase rate a little bit, but the only thing I'm really kind of monitoring is that his line drive rate this year has just skyrocketed. And usually the line drive rate is not necessarily the most sticky statistic out there. And it can really kind of go in ebbs and flows, since the batted ball quality isn't necessarily like drastically different from Friedel. So I think that leaves some opportunity for regression, but for the amount that he's producing at the top of the lineup, you know, it's hard not to ignore. And I have him in a few places where, you know, he's a plug and play in my lineup right now.
Most definitely. I agree with all of that. He's, when healthy, a beast. I would have him definitely in this week. They play in Great American all week. So great, great time to have him on your roster. All right, let's go back to Toronto, where this player I think you might have a little more interest in than Ernie Clement. And obviously the bar was not high in the Ernie Clement situation. This is Addison Barger since May 1st. And again, he's got the hot streak of late too, so you might hit me with that one. Hitting .299 with six home runs and a stolen base. He's homered in four straight games, as we're about to talk about here. But I've seen a lot of people tweeting about it that, you know, just overall for the last month or whatever, you know, the quality of contact's been much, much better. Like he has shown improvements at the plate. Now, sustainability, million-dollar question. Where do you sit on Addison Barger, who, at least for fantasy, he's got multi-positions, he's showing some pop. There's at least something to like right now.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Looking at his process plus and the three aspects of that, decision-making, contact ability, and power. In the month of May, his decision-making has kind of flirted above and below league average, but his contact and power ability have both skyrocketed. And that, you know, that screams that he's unlocked something in his approach. And I think we're really seeing that with the batted ball quality just, you know, dramatically improving. And he's finally, you know, this week he's tapped into that power. He's put a few balls over the fence, which is really exciting. And I think my only real kind of hesitation is that his chase rate has been steadily increasing. And I think, you know, that gives me just a little bit of pause for like fully buying in. But, you know, everywhere I've got him, it's been as a waiver claim and it's, you know, it's a free cost. But I'm just kind of thinking for the future, with the one of the things that, you know, I've kind of alluded to already, but with young players is just really how they're getting pitched. you see a lot of guys who, especially if they're getting, you know, spot starts or the low end in the order, they'll get peppered with fastballs as pitchers are, you know, think they can breeze by them, or, you know, it's a break from the rest of the lineup. And the second a guy, you know, becomes a lot bigger of a force to be reckoned with, they start getting treated differently. And I'm a little worried that, you know, the chase could lead to that. But, you know, all in all, he's doing really exciting things. And I think finally starting to put the tools together that, you know, the analysts have talked about for a long time. So, you know, I'm definitely excited and think he's going to be a useful bat in the Blue Jays lineup. I just had to, you know, have a little bit of a scare there that, you know, the 10% screaming that he's going to go back to, you know, more hype than production that he's been for the last, you know, 2.5 seasons.
Yeah, and to your point about the young players, I'm glad you hit on that, because that's something I try to tell people all the time when, like, a prospect gets called up or a guy gets called, he's swinging it really well, and people get really excited. It's like, it's the golden rule of baseball. First, they see if you can hit a fastball. If you start hitting a fastball well, now they're going to go Bull Durham. They have ungodly off-speed pitches in the big league level. Now they're going to do that. Like, and there's about 40 – no, not 40. There's like probably 5 to 10 scouts at every game. And there's just cameras now everywhere. So they're going to see that hole in your swing real quick. So to your point, like, the adjustments need to be made. And they've been getting made, which is great to see in this regard, and hopefully a sign of things to come. All right, here's one where I get to eat crow for a little bit, and that is Brandon Lau of the Tampa Bay Rays. It's a guy that I've admitted always has really great power, but I'm always concerned about the batting average because he did strike out a ton and still has struck out 27% of the time since May 1st, but he's always hurt. He hasn't really been hurt too much yet this year, so the season's been good if you've taken a flyer on Brandon Lau. He's hitting 269 since May 1st, 7 home runs, 21 runs, 16 RBIs, even stole a couple bags. I think we know who Brandon Lau is by now. That's just my 2 cents on that. If you have it, if you want to add anything, go for it. I want to at least highlight, like, he's actually playing really, really well. And it, I know I hate this term. Doesn't seem like he's getting talked about a lot.
Yeah. I got 2 stats for you that are, that caught me by surprise when looking into him. One is that his current season, 107 WRC plus would actually be the worst of his career.
Wow.
Which I think really, you know, obviously he's struggled to get on the field at times, but he has been a, you know, very, very underrated for who he is, as a hitter over his, you know, 7 or 8 year, career. The other thing is that his current hot streak would be his, you know, highest high in rolling WOBA of his career outside of his debut stretch. So I know a lot of it has been the ballpark. He's gotten help on a few homers, and he's gotten a really nice schedule of facing some pitchers that he's very familiar with. But, you know, as you said, I think we know who Brandon Lau is. All of the peripherals look right in line with his career norms. And, you know, if he's on the field, I think he has a very fair shot of getting to 30 homers on the season. I think, you know, that comes with a 235, 240 batting average. But, you know, take that risk as you will, because, you know, that's what I think everyone kind of knows we're getting. And it's really a bigger bet of, is he going to stay on the field or not?
Especially in that minor league ballpark, that ball is going to keep flying as the season goes on. So get ready for that. All right, the last hitter we are going to discuss is a hitter that you are very qualified to discuss. Mason Wynn. Listeners know how much of a Mason Wynn fan I am and how invested I was this year until the price got a little too out of hand at a point in draft season where I'm like, okay, now he's going next to some other shortstops that are, let's just face it, Bubba, are probably still better than him. But I'm a believer in Mason Wynn. Very bad start to the season. Since May, though, hitting 295 with 3 homers, weirdly no steals, which is slightly concerning. But it seems like he's playing much better. The floor is yours, Nate. Obviously, you watch these guys a lot. So what are you seeing? He actually tweeted about Mason Wynn, I think, last night, which really got my thoughts going. So where are you at on this Mason Wynn? I guess he's getting better, but still not there yet.
Yeah, so it wasn't here where I came on after I'd written about Mason Wynn, right?
I don't think so, no.
So I wrote about Mason Wynn early in the season because he had dramatically changed his profile from last year to this year. And that's always a really scary thing for a rookie to do. And, you know, one, as a Cardinals fan, but two, you know, looking at his teammate, Jordan Walker, he did one thing, tried to do everything the next year, and it didn't work. Mason got off to a really slow start, and I think, you know, by all accounts, it was scary for a lot of people. But, you know, he's a young player, and I think his approach changes, you know, have worked, which is really exciting. He went from last year being this, you know, he didn't walk a bunch, he didn't strike out a lot. He was this really good two-strike hitter, where, you know, anywhere a pitcher threw a pitch with two strikes, he was fouling it off. He was swinging basically the entire time. It was going to be chaos. And, you know, one of the things that I looked at was his bat speed. And for a lot of guys, in their bat speed graphs, you see one main kind of bell curve. You know, that's their A swing or their main swing at like where their average swing speed is. And then a lot of guys will have like a just a second smaller bump way at the bottom of their swing speed range, basically saying that's their two strike approach. One, I find it funny that, you know, the people who are anti-analytics say, oh, these guys don't have two strike approaches these days. And the data just, you know, empirically proves that. But Mason Winn basically just had a glob of speed of swings at the bottom of his swing speed graph, basically saying that, you know, he was doing anything and everything with the barrel to make contact and not strike out. This year, he's come in with a little bit of a different approach. He is not going for all contact all the time. My guess is he put on a couple pounds in the gym this offseason, looking to hit for a little bit more power. He's striking out a little bit more. He's walking a little bit more. And he's making contact a little bit more. But he has a more refined approach. He has, I believe this year, he has like three different kind of swings identified in the swing speed graphs. He's got that main A swing, but then he has a B and a C swing, rather than just, you know, this kind of uncontrolled mess, which obviously it has its perks, but it really seems that he's trying to get on base more and do more damage. And I think we're seeing that, you know, he's hitting for more average, he's making better decisions, and he's even chasing less this year. So I'm really excited that, you know, he broke out of that slump to start the year. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe he's not going to be an upper echelon star shortstop for fantasy purposes, but this guy is, you know, a star in the making with, you know, above average offense and just, you know, star quality defense.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm waiting for it to break out. And when I saw you post about, hey, this is his first one over X amount of miles an hour, and it's like he had so many more of these last year. I'm like, okay, maybe it's coming. Maybe it's coming. Like, it's so close because he's had some stretches where he starts to make some really good contact. The average has creeped up, as to your point. Like, the improvements are getting there, and I'm ready for, like, maybe I was a year early on this, but I was like, okay, he's a 2020 guy this year. Like, I see the potential. I was like, he's this year's Zach Neto, so on and so forth. Maybe it still happens. There's still 4 months to go, basically, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know health has been a big thing for him, and I think it's his back that's the big question. And he really he's gotten a lot of opportunities recently in the two hole with how they've shifted things around and how he's been performing rather than hitting in the nine spot. But he really is not running particularly much. I mean, he only has two stolen bases. And the other thing with health is he hit a ball 111 last year, and the best we've seen is a 109 this year. So that is just kind of a cause for concern on the health side of things. But other than that, I'm really all in.
Sounds good to me. Let's head to the mound. A pitcher you have written about recently, and Ryan Pepiot, who I liked a lot last year. Injuries were kind of not the Florida. Brandon Loudis hit a home run, by the way. But Pepiot is a guy that's really finding his stride right now. He made six starts in May. His last five were all quality starts. He has 22 Ks to eight walks in 36 innings. The ex-FIP Sierras say he maybe got a little fortunate in his results. But when you dug in on Ryan Pepiot, How are we feeling about what we're seeing? Because the month of May, we don't care what XFIPs and Sierra say of fantasy. We got the 2.25 ERA. That's all that matters. And things worked out pretty well.
Yeah, so he's a guy I have rostered a lot of places. I was really in on him. And one of the things he said at the beginning of the episode was, you know, you want strikeout guys. And you want to draft guys who show strikeout stuff. And me and everyone else who drafted Ryan Pepiot was like, I got a strikeout guy with potential to unlock more. And what did we get? I think it's either at 20% strikeout rate or sub 20% strikeout rate. And he's just really showing something completely different. Obviously, his last two starts have been great with, I think it's 13 straight shutout innings from him. But when I wrote about him, and the thing that's really scared me and has me, you know, questioning why all the peripherals hate him, is that he currently has a career high strike rate and a career low first pitch strike rate. So basically, he's falling behind a lot and trying to play catch up with that. And he's giving up a lot of hard contact, and he's, you know, for the most part, gotten bailed out. But he's not getting into counts where he's trying to strike people out or, get weak contact generally, which is, you know, I'm worried about that. The thought I kind of have in my head is that he's actually really tried to change his approach to try and do contact suppression for the park that he's in. And once he goes back to the trough, he might revert back to getting strikeouts, because the arsenal is just really suited for getting strikeouts. He has the great fastball. It's got a lot of carry. It gets whiffs in and out of the zone. The changeup is this enticing pitch, and then the slider is a really hard slider that can be kind of a cutter. But he's using the slider as a cutter, as a secondary pitch. And that's something that you get batted balls on, and especially against right-handed hitters, that sometimes can be hard contact. So I'm a little worried. The stuff looks as good as ever, and it seems like, you know, I fully believe that he's capable of getting strikeouts if he starts locating, trying to achieve that. But, you know, I won't believe it until we see it.
Yeah, and I think it's a great point to the ballpark point you made. I think he could definitely be pitching to take advantage of not getting crushed in that ballpark. That is a very, very good point, because I was with you, like, this is a strikeout guy. He's going late in drafts. What's going on? And he's pitching well, but it's not what we signed up for, that's for sure. Andrew Abbott, he gave up 5 runs on Wednesday, today's show, but we're talking May right now. And over his 6 May starts, Abbott was one of the best pitchers in baseball. 32 and two-thirds innings, 2 earned runs the entire month. 10 walks to 33 Ks, a K per inning, basically. 0.55 ERA. Sierra was closer to 4. But dude was lights out. He literally threw just pure dominance here. Abbott was a player, Nate, that when he got called up a year or two ago, there was like high expectations, really good arm, but how's he going to do in Great American, so on and so forth. And he had his ups and downs. Definitely had his ups and downs. The month of May, there wasn't a lot of downs. So where are we at when you dig into Andrew Abbott? Because I still don't know which guy to trust, but I'm leaning this latter.
Yeah, this feels like the stretch from earlier in the from when he debuted, where he was just pitching lights out and no one really could understand why. And I think we're kind of seeing that here again. The fastball's been it's been working. It's getting both called strikes and whiffs, which is nice. And then the curveball sweeper mix has also been effective. But kind of on the large scale peripheral side, and a little bit of what we saw today, Wednesday start, is his homer per nine is about half of what his career rate is. He's had a really excellent left on base rate. Like, those are the two things that, you know, don't necessarily show up in the pitch quality, which all, you know, look pretty similar. And he is missing bats. But for a pitcher without, you know, ace quality stuff, p- pitching a great American ballpark, I worry that the regression will always be there. And he's the guy, you know, even if he ends up, you know, his first two seasons, he's had an ERA under four overall. And it would not surprise me if he finished, you know, finished this year at a 3.6, 3.7 again. But I just, you know, I, in my leagues, will let someone else have that. The homer problems just terrify me in that park. Like, I barely trust Hunter Green or Lodolo, you know, pitching there, and their stuff is a lot better and I like them a lot more. So, you know, I will seed that and, you know, hope for, you know, hope he continues to pitch well, but I don't see how it all comes to fruition for a longer sample.
That's exactly how I pretty much, well, you phrased it better than I did, but generally how I phrased it last year when it came to Andrew Adam, I'm like, yeah, he's pitching great. I can't explain it. I don't believe it. Like, if he keeps doing it, congratulations. I'm staying away from that ballpark. Like you said, it's why I stayed away from pretty much. I took Lodolo because he was extremely late in drafts, but I didn't take any Hunter Green. That's why you stay away from Rockies pitchers. There's just certain things that terrify me, and that ballpark's one of them when it comes to fantasy. What else? One other thing that terrifies me is Chris Paddock pitching well, and I can't figure out if it's true or not because he's been great. Since May 1st, he's made six starts, three earned runs or less in all six starts. He's gone seven or more innings in three of the six starts, coming off 10 Ks in his last time, but prior to that, not a ton of Ks, 28 strikeouts and 38 innings pitched. So to me, it's like, okay, the ERA is solid. They still suggest he's closer to a 4 than a 2-1, but the strikeouts, they're just non-existent, pitching to a ton of contact. I don't know how sustainable that's going to be for the whole season. When you look at Chris Paddock, how are you how do you feel about him?
Very similarly. You know, I thought his days were numbered and he was going to be the original Zebby Matthews replacement a lot earlier in the year. And obviously he's turned it around and, you know, made me eat my words. And, you know, good for Paddock. But I don't know if he really has a lot to do without overwhelming stuff, without an overwhelming whiff pitch, you know, the kind of poor strikeout minus walk ratio is going to hurt him at some point. The one thing I did notice kind of in his arsenal is that he's turned his slider. He's changed the shape a little bit. It's a little bit harder with a little bit less movement, which is giving him more command. And in his last couple of starts, he's been able to pepper the zone with the pitch and then have the fastball way up above and the changeup below. And it shows a game plan, and he's clearly executing on that game plan. But I think when hitters may force him to come into the strike zone with some of the other stuff, I think it might come all crashing down. You know, we've seen the good and we've seen the bad from Paddock, and I don't know, you know, how viable this is, especially at career low swinging strike rates and, you know, and whiff peripherals.
Yeah, a Paddock that pitches to contact does not sound great, folks. So I'm still staying far away from that. Now, a pitcher that wasn't pitching to as much contact of late, it was a slow start to the year, a great May till his last start when he ran into the Dodgers, which will happen. It's Will Warren, a pitcher that going into draft season was getting helium like crazy, especially when he realized he was joining the rotation. That was a major plus. And he made the six starts before the seven-run outing. He had allowed eight earned runs over basically 26 and a two-thirds innings with 41 strikeouts. Like, he was throwing great prior to that. He still has a 4.8 ERA since May 1st, a 2.47 xFIP, kind of backs up what was great about him. He still had 24.4% K to walk, even with that bad outing. I love what we're seeing from Will Warren. To me, it's like, okay, it's a young pitcher that's finding, like, figuring it out at the big league level. Maybe I'm overexcited on him, but when you dig into Will Warren a little bit more, is this seven runs a blip on the radar on what we saw prior to that? Maybe more so what we should be expecting?
I think so. I mean, I think he is I don't know if the Yankees are fully healthy. Or maybe handle I don't know how, ready the Yankees really were for him to have made 12 starts by June 4th already. Good. Like, the stuff still seems raw, but it still looks really, really good and is really, really exciting. The one thing though is that he has, I mean, he's shown how to get right-handed hitters out. He's got a really solid fastball and sweeper combo, but I am not fully, or sorry, can be sinker sweeper combo. But I'm not really sure, the longevity of the rookie pitcher who is not throwing enough strikes. We see the whiffs. We see, a lot of the exciting stuff. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes, which is great. But, you know, he's really kind of at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to strike throwing. And it feels like, you know, I've watched a handful of starts and it doesn't necessarily look like it's a rookie who's dominating, who kind of has a good feel for how everything's coming together. It feels more of like a chaotic mess where it's, it was a passable start. Or things came together, at the right time. Obviously the start against Texas where he had 10 strikeouts was great, but, it still seems like there's a lot more room to grow. And I think we've been on the more lucky side than skill side that the growing pains haven't shown themselves more. So, I'm still in generally, but, I think Nick Pollock says it a lot, but there's a really, really low floor with rookie pitchers. And obviously the Dodgers start is a good example of that, but that can happen against, a lot more teams than just the Dodgers. And I think, I think it's easy to forget that with a guy like Warren.
That's a good point. That's a very, very good point. All right. We'll go from a youngster to a veteran in Kevin Gausman, who thoroughly disappointed last season after a couple years of just dominance. Looks like he might be getting back to normal. In six starts since May 1st, he's allowed 13 runs over 36 and two-thirds innings for a 3.19 ERA. His xFIP and Sierra are closer to 2.6. He has 40 strikeouts to only three walks over that stretch, which is insane for a 25.3% K to walk. Insane for his recent performance is what I mean. I know Nick even tweeted out there that, hey, look, he's throwing the splitter. He's doing this and that. Like, maybe things are back. I don't know. I'm rooting for him. I'm still worried when it comes to Kevin Gausman. When you dig into Kevin Gausman, does anything stand out to you?
I mean, it's kind of, like everyone, it's all the splitter. He is a one-trick pony. He has this incredible pitch. The pitch is known for coming and going, basically. And it came a couple of years ago. It went last year, and it's come back again, this year. But I think it's very easy to monitor that performance. You can look into any of the game logs from when he pitches and basically see, is the splitter getting whiffs and is it getting located well? It's very much, a very straightforward is it doing the things he wants to do and is it getting multiple whiffs? Because he really doesn't have a lot else in the arsenal. Like, it's just a slider that he, very rarely throws. So, you can monitor it that way. And I'm not like leaping to go, buy in anywhere where I don't have him. But in the places I have him, I'm happy and, potentially seeing if other people might be interested in buying high on it. But if the splitter, showed up this quickly, I think it can disappear as quickly. And, he's done a great job this year of keeping the damage on the fastball to minimal. That's another big part to how he survives. But I don't know, if we get – it's been very linear for Gausman recently. He's either had it or he hasn't. And if this performance starts oscillating, I'm a little worried about where the changes would come from for a guy like him.
I'm with you. He's 34. Not a lot of changes probably left in the tank for Gausman. It's what he's got. He's going to show up and he's going to use whatever he has that day. And sometimes it's not ideal, to say the least. Like, go watch Justin Verlander and company as they get older. Not ideal all the time. All right. That wraps up our list of players. I do have a listener question here for you, Nate, from my buddy. He was a frequent listener to the show here. BP at futures_bet says, I know he had two stolen bases today, but why isn't Ellie running more? Seems like he is not running as often this year. We joked before the show. I don't know. He might be hurt, but he's not telling anybody.
Yeah, it's one of the interesting things. I maybe want to take take a look at it kind of in the coming weeks and months is how do players, you know, react and run after hitting that peak stolen base season? Like even before Acuna got hurt after the 70 steal season, he was not running as much as he was in that season. Ellie's obviously he hit, you know, 67 last year and we're not seeing it. So I'm really curious if, you know, if teams are getting more cautious of letting these guys just like, you know, truly like really run reckless and are keeping it more contained. But at the same time, like, you know, when I draft and when I try to build my teams, like, you know, I know, you know, like most people, you're not getting that peak season again. You know,
yeah.
Ellie wasn't going to steal 67 and then, you know, push for 70, in my opinion. Like, you know, that was going to be the peak. And, you know, if we get, like, I think we could still get 45, 50 steals from him. I don't think that would be crazy. But I think the other thing is that, you know, we kind of mentioned it before, but the Reds are not in this position where they're fighting for, you know, potentially being in the playoff chase yet.
Yeah.
And I think they're trying to be cautious with these guys. And, you know, you do have a new coach there who, you know, Francona, you know, potentially has a lot tighter of a leash on De La Cruz and other guys on their team. So, you know, it'll be interesting to monitor because that's something, you know, he walked twice today and stole two bases today. It could change on a dime. But it's, you know, it's something where I'm not, you know, we'll really never know the reason on what that could be.
The Francona thing is a very good point. I didn't even really think a ton about that at the point in time that could make a huge difference in it. It could be like there's so many factors to it. Situation in games, like didn't stop him last year, but you never know. Like there's a lot to it to take place. And as you mentioned, we probably saw the peak already. So regression was natural, still could be very good, just something to keep in mind. But as far as we know, he hasn't said anything about an injury, just kind of maybe a philosophy change with the team, but all things are said.
Yeah, I know I think stolen bases league wide are actually up season to season. But I don't know, you know, teams have their internal metrics on, you know, what are the barometers for, you know, either stealing on the pitcher, you know, how quick are they to home, or, you know, just the player's break even rate. So, you know, it'll be something to monitor. And I think, you know, I think we will have more smoke from the coaching side of things come the end of the year. Albeit unhelpful for those who have them this year.
Very good point. I have a St. Louis Cardinals question for you before we take off. Michael McGreevy's pitching this weekend. I know I don't stand alone on this, that Michael McGreevy should probably be in the rotation, but he's not. How do you kind of see I know there's a thing of what do you hope happens here? What do you think actually happens here? Does he stick? Does he need an injury to stick? Like what goes on with this? I know that they're saying six man for now.
So I think it's just going to be a spot start. Everything I've heard from Cardinals media is that this is just going to be a spot start. I think they only have one off day the rest of June from here on out. So they might need him again, but you know, as long as all five of their current starters are healthy, I think he's still on the periphery, like on the outside looking in. Counterpoint, the tweet I put out just before jumping on the show is more or less Michael McGreevy destroying the Dodgers offense. You know, like as much as I would love to start him and as exciting as he's been, I would steer clear of that.
Yes.
I would steer clear of that. And I don't think there's I don't think there's necessarily would be a reason to roster him. Looking forward that he might get a second turn in the rotation. It's almost purely he's coming up here to keep the guys on schedule in the rest of the rotation. And I don't think they're at the point with Pallante to start asking questions about a demotion or him getting removed from the rotation.
All right. This is why I asked the question, because I love the skills. I know I'm not alone, but it's like there's no room at the inn right now for McGreevy, unfortunately. But all right, Nate, we're going to wrap it up there. Another fun time chatting with you, talking some fantasy baseball. Remind everybody where to find you and what you got going on at PitcherList before we head out of here.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, thanks for having me again. This was another excellent conversation. But you can find me, writing weekly at PitcherList, and then on Twitter at _NateSchwartz. There's a lot of Cardinals content, but I do tweet a hefty amount about all things baseball, all things baseball data. So I'd like to consider myself at least useful for the average fantasy player. But yeah, that's where you can find me, and I'll have an upcoming article on Vinny Pasquantino. So probably the lesser of the two interesting Kansas City Royal first basemen right now, but some interesting things going on with him.
Yes, the shorter first baseman right now. So thanks again for joining me, my friend. We'll have to do it again sometime. And everybody check out all of Nate's work over at PitcherList.com. But for now, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 768. Catch y'all next time.